Resorts, homes, and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
No electricity, nothing whatsoever.
We need to be prepared for the future.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
And make sure everyone's safety comes first.
Save what for dream. You must ready.
Clearing roads, restoring critical infrastructure.
Eventually, I know it's going to hit. It's only a matter of time.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Prepared. I'm Fred Hooper. We've got a great team of reporters who are on the ground chatting to you, and the stories we bring you could help you, your family, and your community prepare for natural disasters. The weather and how it affects you is already part of your life. So let's keep talking about being prepared. On today's show, disability and disasters. What kind of plans are in place and which plans need a little more work? We'll hear personal experiences and what's being done to help in this space as well. And more villages are having to make an impossible choice to stay or to go. I wonder how you would feel about being told the best thing to do is to leave your village. What kind of emotions would run through your mind? That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
People's lives have been affected by a disaster.
Know what to do.
Know what to do.
Know what to do.
Clearing roads, restoring critical infrastructure.
See, all the signs are coming, so we have to prepare.
Be prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
Designing an emergency plan, an evacuation plan, or an evacuation centre isn't an easy job. There's so much to consider. Even when people are making their own plans, there's still so many things to consider. This is also true for people living with a disability, but at times with even more practical challenges thrown in. That's what we're looking into today, disability and disasters in the Pacific. How do they work at the moment and how could they be done differently? Siosa and Una work for an organisation that advocates for people living with a disability in Tonga. Their office is small. A timber ramp leads up to the front door, white weatherboards and a teal-coloured door frame. Inside, there's a desk and a chair.
Okay, my name is Siosivak. I am the president of NATA, or called Naunawala Maite Tonga Association. We do the advocate and empower persons with disability to move from charity to the live independent, and that is our purpose, and we just do that.
My name is Una, and I'm the office manager of Naunawala Maite Tonga Association.
There's around 100,000 people who live in Tonga, and it's estimated that about 3,000 live with a disability. The last major disaster in Tonga was the volcanic eruption and tsunami in January 2022.
From the volcanic eruption, it just shocked to us because it's a new disaster. Because, and that's the first time for me, because I'm one of the client that I'm evacuated. But on that evacuation center, I was there. I can tell the people are not prepared for evacuation, because when they want, they are all shocked. They run for life, but they forgot the water. That's the important thing.
On the Sunday after the eruption, Una had a meeting with the National Emergency Management Office, also known as NEMO. And as you can hear, Una feels strongly about this, making a point that the Tongan government works for the community as a whole. This is when Una's advocating skills kicked in, standing up for people with a disability.
Yeah, we understand that the government, that the NEMO work for all, not only for disability. When we talk about disaster is different from disability. Only when we talk about disaster, we talk about those who are affected. It's important our member need water, because that's what all Tonga Tapu, they are all water affected. So we, and on bad times, all the water is goes up. The price not normal. These are all goes up on that time. So we supply water to help our member on to help them to wait for the. To give them a support to wait for the government. That's what we do. And now it's a lesson to us. Mm-hmm. Now we have a plan to have our emergency fund. We're not only waiting and rely on government. Mm. We have a responsibility for the disaster. That's why we start fundraising for it. Yeah.
Oh, you said you lost your sight in 2011. Yeah. Was that what happened exactly?
Oh, it's a brain tumor. It's caused by brain tumor. Yeah. Mm. On 2011.
Have you got any sight at all? Any percentage of sight left?
It's blur.
It's blurred.
Yeah.
So you can
see a little bit, but not a lot.
Not a lot.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's that like for you then, living with disasters and particularly the volcanic eruption? If you can't really see a lot anymore.
For me. Maybe because I lost my sight and I can't see well. Talking about disaster, it's not a big issue for blind. Not me, but because we live in a different world. Eh? I have to learn to know more about disaster, the different type of disaster, and from that I can understand what I can do when they have announcement about cyclone, tsunami, and all those things. I'm no matter what, I'm a visual, but I have a children. My all what I learn, I can teach my children that so. Them to assist me on that time.
You're sort of teaching your children what they need to do for you as well in that time of disaster.
Yes.
Right.
That's what I mean. Only disability know what to prepare for themselves.
Yeah.
No, the wheelchair know what they need, important for them. I'm the visual. I know what it need for me, the assistance of the children and all those things. That's what we... Then and we work together with government, NIMO and the NCC, the Tonga Church Council. We work together on empower the person with disability and let them know more about the sign and the MET and also the service of the MET.
Have you also got, I guess, plans in place? Because, like we said before, you're living in a wheelchair as well. Do you have like a plan to evacuate quickly if you need to? I mean, how do you do that if you're in a wheelchair and you need to sort of get across the other side of town?
Yes.
Quickly.
I think that I can talk about the cyclone.
Yeah, sure.
It's had a different disaster, you know. It had it's depend on what disaster, the earthquake, you know. If we had I had a plan for the cyclone, different disaster. Mm. I had a plan for that. If that cyclone, I just prepare. I just look, focus on my house that I safe inside there.
Yeah.
If not, I can move. Yeah, I can move after the evacuation. And we just land to all the tree close to the house. It just cut it far from our house.
Oh, yeah,
yes. Yeah, yeah. Cut it because that tree can break the house during that. Yeah. First thing I need to know that I will be safe in my house. Or if not, I just move to the evacuation center.
Mm. How do you get there?
The evacuation center.
I just move by car.
Okay, yep.
Yes.
Do you drive yourself or?
No. My wife drives.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, and then, And we talk about the evacuation center. It has a lot more,
Yeah.
A lot more, like, that I talk about, it had a challenge there.
Yeah.
If that evacuation center is accessible, it's good.
Yeah.
Not use. But if not, it's a big challenge for us to stay there in the 3 days, like 72 hours of, you know.
Yeah.
Una and Siosi have been through quite a few evacuations, from cyclones, floods, earthquakes, and most recently the volcanic eruption and tsunami. While disabilities are often high on the conversation list in this space, Una says that more could be done still. She explains how one of the evacuation halls needed to be modified for people living with a disability recently.
It's like a sliding wall they have to put in the hall because for the time of disaster. But it's a good move.
So they're able to sort of put a temporary division in to the...
For the time when the disability need their privacy, like what Siosi talk about.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Okay. Now what we have, now we happy because the government start to work on that.
Do you feel like you're making progress? Do you feel like there's good changes happening at the moment in disability for the people living with a disability?
Yes, that's what we think now. It's a good,
it's work
because we're moving.
Yeah.
Siosi Vaka and Una Halafihi. They work for Tonga Disabled Person Organisation.
What's your plan? Are you ready to leave your home? Plan now before disaster strikes. Pacific Prepared.
There are some organisations in Tonga trying to improve planning around disasters, especially for people living with a disability. Sometimes the changes aren't huge, just minor things like a handrail or a ramp or a privacy screen, but things that could make a huge difference to somebody. The Tonga National Council of Churches has been trying to better understand the needs of people living with a disability and how plans should reflect those needs.
Thank you. My name is Siu Ivahamama of Fangpo. I work at the Tonga National Council of Churches and as the program director, and we are working on various projects. People living with disabilities usually say that nothing about us without us, and therefore we had to include them, starting from the very beginning.
Can you just give me an example or a practical example of a change that you've been able to make on the ground for people living with a disability? If there is a disaster, have there been anything that you've been able to implement to make life easier for people living with a disability if that happens?
We have planned and implemented varieties of activities in place, especially with the community level. First of all, we conducted a training specifically targeting people with disabilities and their caregivers, giving them more information about disaster, and it has been proved to be very effective because this has been the, most of them said that this is the first time for them to be included in this type of trainings, to know more about disasters, different types of disasters and how to respond to them, and also various ways of getting information for them, because different types of disasters have limited access to information and also to buildings and things like that. So we build around these needs for people with disabilities. What we actually do with the communities is that we first establish a village emergency management committee, and with this committee members, we developed the village emergency management plan. And within this village emergency management plan, we included some things that people with disability really need. And one of them is that in every village emergency management committee, there would be a member, a female and a male members of people with disabilities included in these committees. When they are representing the whole most vulnerable groups in the communities, by giving their voice out and identifying their various basic needs that needs to be addressed in working together with the committee and the community as a whole.
What are the biggest sort of or the basic needs that people have living with a disability when there is a disaster? Like what happens on the ground? Do people, what are the biggest challenges, I suppose?
I think from their perspective is that they are left out in, when giving a relief distribution because of the way how Tonga distribute the relief. They usually distribute it to the evacuation centers,
right,
and not to the individual household. And because of that, most of the people with disabilities didn't have a chance or didn't want to come or evacuate to the evacuation centers because of various reasons. And one of the major reasons is privacy.
Right.
And also not accessible. The facilities are not accessible. And that was one of the things that we wanted to do in the communities is to enhance or encourage people in the communities, including church leaders, because their buildings are used as evacuation centers and also community buildings as well. So we wanted to encourage them to have a look at the existing buildings to make it more accessible for people with disabilities. And we had a pilot program on that with the project that we had by renovating or retrofitting three of the evacuation centers, one in Hapai and two in Wawau. It's more like a pilot program, letting other churches or other communities to learn from that and how to make it more accessible for people living with disabilities.
So sort of, I guess, basic things like ramps and handrails, those kinds of things, yeah?
Yeah, including toilets and bathrooms, yeah, which are more accessible for them. And also with rooms for their privacy.
Yeah.
And also with in terms of managing the evacuation centres, we have also trained the Village Emergency Management Committees to be aware of the needs of people with disabilities.
Right.
And if there's a warning, for example, if there's a tropical cyclone warning, it's in the plan of the community to first help out or support people with disabilities, first go to their homes. And we also have a mapping exercise. We have already allocate all the locations of the homes of people with disabilities, yeah, and elderly.
Yeah.
So as soon as their plan is activated, when a warning is coming, then they will first help those people. And that's part of the big change that we have in looking at disability inclusion here in Tonga.
The Tonga National Council of Churches and some of the work they've been doing in the Tongan communities to try and improve emergency plans, especially for people living with a disability.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepare.
If you're hearing this, you're obviously interested in the Pacific, which is why I wanted to let you know about ABC Pacific website. You can listen back to anything you hear on the program, and it's just a good way for you to connect with us. You can share information with us, or maybe you're working on something in the disaster preparedness space, or maybe you've got some feedback for us. There's also a heap of links on there that you might be interested in. Pacific Beat for all your news and current affairs in the Pacific. And for all the latest sports news, you've got Can You Be More Pacific? The easiest way to get in touch is to search for ABC Pacific and then scroll down to the Connect With Us section. There's lots of ways to connect with us there.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
I wonder what kind of connection you've got to your home. Maybe it's the ocean, the trees, the hills, or the mountains. Or maybe it's something that you can't even put your finger on. It's just home. So if someone asked you to make a choice to leave and risk losing that home to climate change or going to a new home, I wonder what you'd do. This is the choice that some residents in Fiji have been faced with, and a lot of people are choosing to stay.
Mediwallace Yee is a University of Queensland PhD candidate. She's been looking into this issue in the Pacific, and she spoke with ABC's Pacific Beat recently.
For Sarua Island, the coastal erosion and flooding have severely damaged the village over the past two decades. So you have homes that have been submerged, seawater has spoiled food crops, and even parts of their seawalls have been destroyed due to sea level rise.
What's the incentive to stay for a lot of these people?
Despite what the sea has done to them, you know, almost all the residents of Seru Island are choosing to stay. And, you know, from our research, you know, we found that their decision to stay is based on this concept called Vanua. And Vanua is a Fijian word. It's a land-based language. If it's translated directly to English, it means land, a region or a spot. But, you know, for us Fijians, even in the Pacific, Vanua refers to more than just, you know, land. For us, it's the interconnectedness of so many things like the natural environment, social bonds, ways of being, spirituality. And for the people of Serua in this study, they came up with another, they called attention to another less well-known but no less significant dimension of Vanua, that is stewardship. And the people have managed their lands and livelihoods in a variety of climatic and weather conditions. So stewardship matters, you know, in a warming world. And for Serua, it provides that strong impetus to remain and protect the place of belonging and also connection to their land, yes.
So it's very much just about that spiritual bond they have to the land. Is that fair to say?
Yes, definitely. You know, for Serua, it has historical importance. Firstly, it is the traditional residence of their paramount chief. And for them, remaining on the island is acting as guardians and meeting that customary obligations to sustain that place of such cultural importance.
Yes. So it's really not as simple as simply packing your bags and moving on. I guess what concerns, if they were to do that, you know, what concerns would they have about leaving? Would they essentially be disrupting that spiritual bond to their ancestors and things like that?
Yes, definitely. You know, that's correct. You know, the concern is if relocation does take place, if and when, you know, such thresholds are, you know, are met and relocation emerges as the last resort option, for the people of Serua and Fiji as well, relocation would mean a way of life and both tangible and intangible assets, you know, will be compromised or lost. And you know, their concern is if they relocate, it may put their non-economic assets like cultural heritage, sacred sites, even their traditional layout of their village in danger. So, you know, this may be a difficult process to understand for an outsider. Because for us, for people of Serua, it means so much more than just renouncing physical assets like buildings and infrastructure. You know, these are deep-seated values linking communities to their land, yes.
Yeah, it's that cultural identity, which was just the fabric of so many communities. It really does hold them together. I guess, you know, the elephant in the room, though, is that rising sea levels, things like that, it's inevitable, spiritual bonds or not. Have they given much thought as to, I guess, what they'll do if that does happen in the future and their home does become sort of uninhabitable?
Yes, if, like I mentioned earlier, if that that time comes, then definitely they will have to relocate. But this is where the government comes in and they need to walk with them, with the people, in order to make that process successful and a sustainable one. Yes.
So this phenomenon is not only found in Fiji. Your research has actually highlighted that it's happening around the world. How can governments walk the line between caring for populations affected by rising sea levels and their desire to stay in their home villages and towns?
Yes, thanks, Kyle. You know, they usually say those closest to the issue or the problem are also closest to the solution as well. So, you know, our research finds that no climate adaptation policy should be decided without the full and direct participation of those affected. You know, relocation programs, they should be culturally appropriate and also align with the local needs and proceed only with the consent of the people affected. And in places like for Serua, where the residents are unwilling to relocate, I think it's very important, it's crucial to acknowledge it. But at the same time, where feasible, they should support the decision to stay and provide these communities with relevant information on the risks and the potential consequences of both staying and also relocating. And this, we believe, can help develop, you know, more appropriate adaptation strategies for communities in Fiji and beyond, you know, around the world, you know, as people move home, but also resist relocation in a warming world. Now that more and more research has been carried out, especially in this phenomena of voluntary immobility, it's opening up spaces, pathways for engagement and dialogue between governments, donors, implementing agencies to engage more with the grassroots level, those who are affected. Yes.
How soon do we need to see sort of action put in place and governments start to get to work and really sort of, yeah, get to work doing this?
I think the sooner the better, yes, because now that the impacts of climate change are really, it's existing at the moment, you know, right as we speak, you have communities here in Fiji, the Pacific and around the world that are experiencing these direct and indirect impacts of climate change. The actions, dialogue, engagement needs to begin right now.
Mehdi Wallacey-Yee is a University of Queensland PhD candidate speaking there with ABC's Pacific Beat program.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared.
Pacific Prepared is supported by the Pacific Media Assistance Scheme with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of PACMAS or the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, NBC Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, FBC Fiji, Samoa National Radio 2AP, SIBC Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and TBC Tonga. If you're working in the disaster preparedness or resilience space, keep us informed so that we can keep everybody informed. Maybe you've got a story idea, a personal experience to share, a topic to cover, or someone that we should meet. The easiest way to get in touch is to search for Pacific Prepared and then scroll down to the Connect With Us section. You can also listen back to the program. Just type Pacific Prepared into your search engine and you'll find us. We're also on the ABC Listen app. My name's Fred Hooper. Please share any information that you've learned today and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.